Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
Who did this?
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, here's the odd part of this. And all of a sudden...
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I see you sitting there. I can see you. I can see what you're doing. Oh my God. Oh my God. That is so awkward. The funny thing is, you think no one can see what you're doing? Check out YouTube, man. I had bologna for breakfast this morning. I'm not feeling too well. I like bologna. I like hot dogs, but I shouldn't be eating them. I'm not feeling too well. It's like someone created a list of foods that you should never eat. And I, by mistake, thought it said foods that you should always eat. It's like that. It's been almost a month now, and I just realized you're supposed to turn your clock forward. I didn't know that. Maybe that's why I'm late for everything. I can still see you, so stop doing that. It's funny when people are driving in their car and they're picking their nose, which is, I think, the national pastime. It's not baseball, it's picking your nose. And then, you look out your car window, you're sitting in traffic, and you catch somebody else picking their nose, and you say, oh, that's absolutely disgusting. Picking your nose, that's disgusting. Picking your nose in your car, and then you look at your hands and you go, oh my God, I'm picking my nose. Oh my God. Where does that stuff go, by the way? When you flick it out the window or something, that dry nose pick stuff, does that degrade? Where does that stuff go? Does it go into our water system? What happens to that stuff? I guess it's popular knowledge that cockroaches, if there was some planet catastrophe, that cockroaches would still be alive on the Earth. I'm not sure about that. Because if I see a cockroach, I just step on it and it dies. I'm not too sure how resilient they really are. I mean, I know there's a lot of them, but it's not like you can't kill them or anything. How do you get that the cockroach will be the last remaining thing on the planet, on the Earth, that will survive? I'm not sure about that. It doesn't take much to get rid of them. Of course, they always come back because there are so many of them. That's what that's about. All right, that's enough. In the background, you can probably hear that the allergy season has kicked up for Ron. Ron being myself, talking about myself in the third person, which is a dangerous thing to do. It sounds like you're mentally unstable, Donald. Speaking of Donald Trump, did you bring that up? Oh my God, he did it again. Look, you know, I just don't understand this man, this self-proclaimed genius. Self-proclaimed genius. He thinks and he says he's the smartest person in the world. He's a genius. I don't even know how to respond to that. Most people, their mouths just hang open and they just don't know what to say when you hear something so inanely absurd. He was in Michigan yesterday at one of his rallies, and he's standing in front of his 31% crowd. Yeah, that's a lot of people. That's a third of the country. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at, whether you have allergies or not. It's not enough to get you anywhere, but it's nothing to sneeze at. Okay. At 31%, 33%, just that number just never changes ever. Anyway, so he's what he does is he goes to these rallies and he just has a list of people that have crossed him or have commented about him or criticized him, and he goes after them like it's an enemy hit list. And it's really pathetic. I mean, his crowd loves it, but from outside of his crowd, that's about as pathetic as you can get. They done me wrong. Let me tell you how much I don't like them, and they're on my enemy. They are enemies. He says they are his enemies. Everybody's out to get him. There are so many mental problems with this man. In any event, here's the deal. He was talking about Adam Schiff, who was a Democrat. He's on the House Intelligence Committee. By the way, Donald Trump could never be on any type of intelligence committee because by definition of the phrase intelligence committee, Donald Trump could never serve on it. In any event, he's in front of the crowd. He's bathing in the crowd that loves him. And he says that Adam Schiff, Representative Adam Schiff, is like a little child in a schoolyard. He says, and I quote, in front of the crowd, this is the President of the United States, supposedly the most respected office in the world, supposedly at this point. He says, Adam Schiff, he calls him pencil neck. He calls him pencil neck. And he says in front of the crowd, this is the President of the United States, he says, Adam Schiff, pencil neck, has the smallest, thinnest neck I've ever seen. This is your president talking like a second grader in the schoolyard. This is supposed to be a mature, intelligent leader, commander in chief, duly elected in this country. Well, I don't know about the duly part. And he's standing there in front of a crowd calling a representative of the people a pencil neck. He's got the smallest and thinnest neck I've ever seen. What the hell are you doing, man? What the hell is wrong with you? It's embarrassing. It's stupid. It's as childish as you can get. The commander-in-chief of this country should not be standing publicly before a crowd as president with the seal on the pulpit, calling people names based on a physical feature that they have. Come on, man. Other people at a point in Donald Trump's campaign said Donald had very small hands. But Donald, you're the president now. You stoop so low, you can't even see above ground anymore. Again, I don't care about your policies, which suck as far as I'm concerned. But you don't, as President of the United States, representing you and me, you don't stand there and call people names. You don't come up with little nicknames that are degrading based on some physical aspect that you've noticed on somebody. May I say, if you're going to do that, Donald, I'll call you a dickhead. All right, let's move on. Again, this has nothing to do with policy. This has nothing to do with party. It has to do with a man that actually acts like a little child. Okay, let's move on. Of course, I could talk about Betsy DeVos, who is the czar of education, who spent the past week talking about the fact that the White House is cutting all funding for the Special Olympics. And Betsy DeVos says in front of hearings and in front of people and cameras that this is what the president wants, so I go along with the president. We just have no money to do this, and this is what the president has presented for the budget. There's a big backlash by everybody, including Republicans, saying, cut the Special Olympics? What are you nuts? I mean, that's like a political stupid bomb. I mean, like, what are you talking about? So Donald Trump yesterday announces that, no, I'm not cutting the Special Olympics. I don't know where that came from. Donald, you are so freaking annoying. It's unbelievable. You know that bus that Donald Trump throws people under? Betsy's under that one now. Threw you under the bus, Betsy, like a piece of nose picking, flicked out of a car window. That's where you are, Betsy. Thanks to the leader that you just stood by. Will you people never learn? Anyway. Man. Okay, we've got a great guest coming up a little bit later in the program. He's going to talk about the jury system. Yeah, I've talked about this before. I've told you many of my jury episodes about the fact that I do not like being on a jury, and I really never have been. I've always gotten out of it. And I wonder why the jury system involves people that just don't want to be there. I got to tell you, if I was on trial for something or whatever, I would not want people sitting there who can't wait to get the hell out of there. So why waste all this time and money for people that just don't want to be there? Perhaps it's because if they did, they would lose their contracts that they have. Maybe they're independent contractors. Maybe they have children at home. I don't know the answer. But there are plenty of circumstances where someone would say, I can't do this. Why are you bothering me? If they sent out if they sent out letters saying, okay, you've been selected to do jury duty, and you respond by saying, I'll go, but I'm not going to do it because you're not going to select me because I don't want to be there. Why go through that entire process, man? Why call them in, spend all that money, when these people are not going to sit on a jury? They'll do everything they can not to. Apparently, my guest thinks that the jury system is wonderful, and that I don't know. I totally disagree. But we'll talk to him in just a bit here. I just don't get it. It's funny. Even the jury experts and the legal experts say, "Well, the system isn't perfect, but it's the best we have." If we employed that kind of attitude in other stuff, that wouldn't work very well. Yeah, we got the Boeing 737 MAX. There's been two fatal plane crashes where hundreds and hundreds of people have died. What do you say, Boeing? You know, the plane's not perfect, but it's the best we got. Oh, okay. We didn't know that. Thank you very much. What are you talking about? Oh, it's, you know, it's not perfect, but it's the best we've got. I don't know. I just don't get it. I mean, I wouldn't mind serving on a jury. It's just that I have issues. I just don't. I mean, if you're in trouble legally, you need a good attorney. I get that. I don't like the fact that the more money you have, the better attorney you get. Like Robert Kraft, he is saying to, you know, he's been accused of receiving happy endings in a massage parlor by girls that have been trafficked to be there. And Robert Kraft, of course, owner of the Patriots, I've talked about him before. This is another example of money power. If you didn't have Robert Kraft's money, your ass would be slapped in jail by now for whatever. But if you're Robert Kraft and you have power and the best attorneys, you can get out of stuff or settle. That's the most imperfect thing about our jury system.
Well, you know, it's not the best, but it's the best we have. It's,
This car you're trying to sell me doesn't have any brakes.
Yeah, I know. But it's, you know, it's not perfect, but it's the best car we have. Good luck. Good luck trying to stop the car. It's the best we have. I'm sorry. Anyway, that argument doesn't work with me. So Robert Kraft, now he's saying, don't release the video of me. You say you have a video of me lying on a table getting a happy ending. Don't release the video. Now he's admitting that they probably do have that video. Now he's admitting it. But he's not guilty. Do you know why? Because he believes that the videos were obtained illegally. Robert, I just don't get you. I don't get you, man. Anyway, there's your story. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're probably going to speak to our guest about the jury system, which is probably jury-rigged. You know, I have many friends who are attorneys, by the way, and they're fine, wonderful people. But at the same time, I don't know. It's like playing a game, and you got to know all the rules, otherwise you lose the game, which has nothing really to do with the person that's on trial. And I don't quite understand all of that. I really don't. Anyway, whatever. Have you found that the world these days has turned into a giant whatever? Donald Trump has done one thing very in a very smart sense. He's worn me down.
Ron Van Dam is different than most podcast hosts. He really understands his audience.
They like to be smacked and whipped.
Well, I think we're going to get along just fine. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hello.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good. This is Drew. This is Ron.
This is Ron. If this is Drew, this is Ron. We have jury expert Dr. Drew Sherrod. He joins us now. And we're asking the question, how can we improve the jury process in America? And how can citizen juries be more effective? I wish we had 2 hours here because I've got tons of questions for you. I don't understand the jury system. I don't understand why there's not an all-volunteer jury system, to be honest with you. Do you think that improvements need to be made, or are we good?
Well, the idea of all-volunteer jury amounts to turning over trial by jury to experts.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think we should do that. You know, trial by mm-hmm. jury is enshrined in the Sixth and Seventh Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
Yep.
It's the basis of democracy. It's when the people speak truth to power. So it ought to be justice by the people instead of justice by experts.
Yeah.
And lots of research, when you compare similar decisions of citizen jurors versus experts, they both have biases, just different kinds of biases.
I guess.
So turning it over to experts doesn't solve the problem, I would argue.
I don't know what the percentage is, but it seems to be higher than 50% of people that don't want to go. They'll do anything they can to come. I think they think of excuses in the car on the way over to the courthouse on how they can get out of this thing because they have jobs, whatever. I know it's a civil duty and it's actually a mandated duty, But at the same time, we're dealing with a lot of people that, don't want to be there. Is that healthy?
Well, the actual percentages are about 15% of people never receive their jury summons, either because they've moved on to the address change, and then another 11 to 12% have received these summons but don't respond. So that's about 25% off the top who just never show up at the courtroom. Then, you know, once people show up, then judges are pretty liberal, especially in state courts where judges are elected by the people. Judges are pretty liberal in allowing excuses.
Yeah.
And it's natural not to want to show up, not to want to serve, because you, what do you get? You get $15 to $25 a day for jury duty, and it's and you have to get child care, you have to arrange for transportation.
Yeah.
It's a pretty onerous task.
Yeah, true.
I would also just add one more thing.
Yeah.
Once people do show up, then judges are not only liberal in granting excuses, they're also, attorneys have lots of peremptory strikes. So if they can convince the judge that people are already biased.
Yeah.
Or if they just don't like somebody, often they get up to 10 strikes.
Yeah. When we learn and hear about trials that are in the public limelight, I know that there is also there a good percentage of the population that doesn't understand that jury decision where, what? It doesn't make sense. And I guess the answer is you have to be there to understand about a jury decision that you don't get publicly.
Well, the classic one, which any lawyer I ever work with always mentions, the McDonald's coffee spill. And that was 25 years ago when coffee was 49 cents a cup.
True. That's a good point. Yeah, but.
But that's where the juror, the jurors awarded this woman who burned herself when she spilled her coffee. The jurors awarded, I think, $2.7 million in punitive damages.
Yeah.
And to everybody, it looked like a ridiculous verdict, but the facts were that McDonald's had 600 or 700 complaints about serving super hot coffee and what they knew would be a moving environment where spills were likely. And they actually encouraged their franchisees to serve coffee at a higher temperature to keep it warm for a morning commute.
Yeah.
So the jurors had more facts than the people do when the people think, what a crazy verdict.
I guess it's always like that, although I remember the O.J. Simpson trial, which we covered on the radio in great detail, and we could watch every minute of it. Yet, of course, the results of that caused a national uproar to this day. So that was curious. But again, I guess there are jury instructions that we don't get to hear. I mean, some of those cases are like, you're amazed.
Let me give you some pre-facts, and then let's talk about O.J.
Okay.
It turns out that most people make up their minds during opening statements. So during deliberations, at least half of what people talk about are events from their own life.
True.
It's not evidence presented at trial.
True. Good point.
So you know, once you know that people are, arriving at verdicts that way, by by comparing it to something from their life and creating a story, then you can understand it much better. And on O.J., it turns out that I think 85% of African Americans thought he was innocent, and about the same percentage of whites thought he was guilty.
Yeah.
And I think what this says is that different ethnic types actually see the facts differently, that the facts that as they appear to blacks and as they appear to whites were different. At that point, the LAPD was so notorious for harassing African-Americans that it wasn't hard for African-Americans, I think, to conclude that the evidence had been tricked, evidence had been moved, a racist cop was involved. There's no reason to expect that this evidence was, valid.
Yeah. Drew, how can we improve our jury system? Is there room for improvement, or again, is it good?
I think it has to be improved, because this really is. If we can't improve juries, I'm off to saying we're about done with democracy, because we don't trust the people. Part of it is what we've already talked about, making sure more people show up, more people take part, fewer people get excused. But the other part, too, is presenting information in a way that the brain can comprehend. Most, for example, the El Chapo trial, that was 3 months of evidence, 3 hours of a judge's instructions, which are very arcane, and they deliberated for 7 days. So the what my advice to attorneys and the judges and the law professors and the whole court system is to think like a juror and not like a law professor. If you know that jurors are going to tell stories, then you have to present evidence in a narrative format that organizes the evidence for them. That affects how they view the evidence that is presented during the case in chief and what they recall it during deliberations.
I've had many conversations about this with various guests, and to many they respond by saying that the legal system seems to be a game where you have to know how to play it. You have to know the rules of the game, and those people are successful. So the end result is that that some citizens feel that it's a manipulation of facts, and it's the way they're presented, how you read a jury, that more than it is of the actual case and the actual laying out of evidence and pointing out certain things. And again, it's more of a knowing your path in order to move things around so it seems like something else. So do you find that at all?
You know, I'm going to say again, you can game the system if the system is as opaque and obtuse. But if you understand that the evidence has to be presented like a narrative, if you mimic mm-hmm. the processes of the brain, then it's much harder to game the system.
Yeah.
It turns out that in lots of nice research, if information presented to jurors in a narrative format is much more persuasive than evidence presented in a chronological format.
I agree.
Most attorneys are likely to just have a yellow pad, 50 points, check it off, check it off, check it off.
Yeah.
And this, they'll say this witness will come, they'll testify at this point, and this other witness will testify at this point.
Right.
And jurors hear an hour of that from each side, or maybe 2 hours from each side, and they really have no idea, what's happening.
Correct.
And so they logically and intuitively revert to a story from their own lives.
Correct.
And that's where they
Correct.
Create their narrative.
That makes sense.
The staggering fact is about 3/4 of people make up their minds during the opening statements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. And I guess that's attorneys want to avoid people that have made up their own minds, and thus is a talent in itself. And I know that there are teams that actually evaluate what's going on in jurors' minds, as we've seen on some television shows, which tend not to be accurate in any sense of the word. I've always found go on, I'm sorry.
I just said Dr. Bull's show was pretty amped up. Yes, you're right.
You pretty much understood what I was saying, I guess. One thing I never understood about trials is when a judge says, strike what you've just heard. You did not hear that. Do not let that enter into your deliberation. How can a human being not hear something that they heard?
That's such a reasonable question to ask. I have no idea. It amounts to nonsense.
It's fascinating.
Both judges' instructions are so arcane. What's that, sir?
Yeah, I know. Now we've got a book involved here that Drew has written, and it's fascinating. Just by this conversation, you can tell it's called The Jury Crisis: What's Wrong with Jury Trials and How We Can Save Them. It's a fascinating book, and it gets into many of the subjects that we're talking about, and then some. What compelled you to write this book?
I'm a real social psychologist. I've taught at colleges for 15 years, mm-hmm. published a textbook, a lot of articles, and then became a jury consultant. And I thought I have a kind of unique view of an official academic social
yeah.
psychologist who does empirical research and then have taken part in the system for 30 years. So I really felt like I know some facts in a way that most people don't, and this book caps my career. So it
yeah.
dispenses my wisdom.
It's actually, it looks into the human mind, like where does it go when certain things affect it, when certain things start directing it. It's a fascinating book, and it goes beyond really talking about the jury system. It kind of gets into people's heads, into why they form opinions and why they go in the directions that they go. It's fascinating. It's available.
Thank you. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
may I just say there is a webpage, thejurycrisis.com. And you can order it through there, thejurycrisis.com.
Perfect. Thejurycrisis.com. Again, we could go on forever, but they don't allow me to do that. But pleasure speaking to you today.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate it.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That'll do it for today. Ladies and gentlemen, you are wonderful. You really are. You have many fine attributes. I don't really know what they are at this point because I don't know you. And that's the beauty of our relationship. You don't know me, really. And I don't know you. I like that, don't you? Go forth and multiply. I wish you peace.